Linda Scherzinger, you're involved with the United Church here in Halifax and across Canada in a variety of ways. You're a retired lay minister. You're the convener of the Maritime Conference Working Group on Just Peace for Israel and Palestine. And you're the elected commissioner to the General Council that met in August in Ottawa. The General Councils happen once every 3 years. And this General Council that just happened on August 17th, 2012, passed some actions as it relates to the United Church's Israel and Palestine policy. Can you outline a little bit of how that happened?
The United Church has had numerous proposals or resolutions coming to the General Councils for many years because there are individuals and groups across the church that are very concerned about the issue. A number of them have passed in previous years. The last General Council met in 2009, and there were some very strong resolutions on the issue that came forward at that time, but some of them did not pass because they were so strong that some people were not comfortable with the language or the way they were brought forward. And also they were highly criticized by the Jewish partners, Canadian Jewish Congress. And for both of those reasons, what did pass was a resolution asking all levels of the church to study the issue, having studied the issue, then to take appropriate action. They also asked the leaders of the United Church nationally to do a thorough study and then write up a comprehensive report and recommendations to come back to the next General Council, and that is what came to the council this August, was that report and recommendations.
Let's just talk about how the research, how the documents that were presented to the General Council, or more clearly to the Working Group on Israel-Palestine Policy, how were those gotten at? It was a very well-researched campaign with eyes on the ground. Can you just elaborate a bit on that?
There were five people who were on this working group, three who were volunteers who did all of the work, plus two staff people. They met together, they read, they discussed, and then they went on a trip to the Middle East. They visited and talked and listened to people who had many different perspectives in Israel and Palestine. And so they met with some Palestinian Christians and Muslims and Jewish Israelis, some peace-oriented and some very concerned about the security of Israel. And they heard all of these different viewpoints. And then they came back and they continued to read and to study and talk and argue and debate among themselves. They were not in total agreement. It sounds to me from their presentation that it took a lot of discussion and debate to come to agreement as to what they would put in their report and then what recommendations they would bring forward as a resolution to come for action at the General Council.
And what went into their report of note?
They did conclude that the occupation, Israel's military occupation of the West Bank and East Jerusalem is a major obstacle to peace and to peace negotiations, as is the settlements. And so those two things are they identified as being very provocative of violence and being kind of the sources of a great deal of injustice, which then provoked a response. So that was a major point in their report and proposal. They, of course, were saying that they totally reject all forms of violence. They focused a lot on dignity of all people and respect and security being needed for all peoples of the region. That if you don't have that, you're not going to have peace. And that justice for the Palestinians is really the way to have security for Israel. I should mention that in terms of a specific action, what was most clear in terms of action was a request that the church and its membership engage in economic action, sometimes called a boycott, of products from the settlements. Settlements in the West Bank or East Jerusalem are produced illegally because they are from the Palestinian land, and they use resources that do not belong to the Israeli settlements. And so it's a very focused boycott, and the decision was to support this, and it would be a campaign resourced by the staff of the United Church nationally, which is called the General Council staff.
How did the motion pass? Was it a vote? Was the vote close? Was there lead-up animosity? Maybe just set the stage and let us know how that actually happened.
The resolution, as well as the very lengthy report, had both gone out long before the meeting actually happened. So everyone had read it all, and there were many, many responses that came. They were in the media, and they were at the website, because they had gone to the moderator and leaders of the church. So there was a lot of back and forth, pro and con. Was highly controversial before the meeting ever started. Once the event came to the agenda item, it was introduced by the three volunteers who had written the report and the resolution. And then just before it was dealt with, there were two other speakers, one who spoke on behalf, you might say, of the Israeli perspective, and another who spoke on behalf of the Palestinian perspective. And following that, the resolution was discussed in great detail, and people had the opportunity to go point by point and say what they agreed with or what wording they did not agree with, and actually changed a great deal of the wording until it was finally agreed upon by everyone present, and then it became put in the form of a motion to the House. And once it came to a motion, then it was voted on by everyone. And it was interesting that it was widely supported, even though many people raised a lot of questions and had, it would appear that there were people who didn't agree with this or that. But when it came to the vote, it was not a secret vote. You could see across the room how everyone was putting up their voting card, and a wide majority supported it.
Now, the act of putting economic action, or let's call it a boycott, against Israeli settlement products, it's not really necessarily going to affect the Israeli economic engine. Why then? What other purpose might it serve?
I think it serves several important purposes. One is that it raises the profile of the issue, and it causes people to think about it and to ask questions. So it gives an opportunity for more education. People want to know, well, why are you doing that? And so many people are asking for more information. So we have that added opportunity. It's also very important because for many years, the United Church, as have other churches and other organizations, we have said many times that we support peace in the Middle East, we support justice, we are against the occupation, but we have never actually taken an action that shows that we take it seriously. So this takes those words and makes them real by putting them into an action. And it also, you might say, it exposes the United Church to controversy and more conflict in a way, which has already been happening. We've had a lot in the media, a great deal of debate, and I'm sure it will continue for a time. Another point is that there are other organizations that have already been taking the same stand in other countries. In the U.S., two mainline churches, the United Methodist and the Presbyterian, and also in the U.K., the Methodist Church, in Australia, the Uniting Church. And so we are joining others, and as this and I believe it will increase. And I think it's kind of the movement is growing, and I feel that's very important. And I think that the State of Israel recognizes the importance of this shift in support and recognition of what is going on and what needs to be changed for justice to be done.
When we look at Christianity, do you think Jesus Christ was an activist?
I definitely do. I think that's what got him into trouble. I think it's what was so important in many ways for the people of his time, that they heard the way he was talking, the things he said, the way that he said them engendered a sense of hope and of encouragement and of new possibilities at a time when they were living under an occupation. And I'm sure the people then were very discouraged, and they saw no way for them to be able to live with a sense of empowerment or freedom or in a hopeful way. If you look at what he was saying in that context, then you can see how important for the people he spoke to and how threatening to the powers, the political and economic powers. And eventually how dangerous for him personally. And of course, he was not the first. He was in a line of prophetic voices through the prophets, Jeremiah, many other prophets who spoke for justice and who put their lives on the line, calling those in power to not be greedy and to not treat the poor in an unjust way. So it was a very important prophetic way of being. And we hope to continue in that way, because that's how we're called to be.
Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you for your interest.